This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Earthwise, Environment and Peace with Justice interviews on Plains FM 96.9.
Welcome to Earthwise. I'm Martin Griffiths. For today's program, Lois and I are very grateful to have the opportunity to once again talk with Palestinian-American Ali Abu Nima, journalist, author, co-founder and director of the website electronicintifada.net.
Well, there's so much that's happening in many parts of the world, but especially in historic Palestine. I really believe what someone else said some time ago, maybe said by a number of people, until there's justice in Palestine, there will never be peace. That is peace based on justice anywhere in the world. Welcome to Earthwise, Ali Abu Nima.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be joining you again.
Well, this new law passed by the Knesset a few days ago, the nation state law, as it's called, what's it all about and what is its significance?
Well, its significance is more symbolic than anything else, although it is important symbolism, because the law that was passed affirms what really has been the case since the very beginning, which is that the state of Israel is a state that privileges one group of people over another. In particular, it privileges the Jewish settler colonial society over the indigenous Palestinian population. Now, some people have been saying, you know, this law turns Israel into an apartheid state. I think that's a lot of nonsense. Because Israel was already an apartheid state from when it was founded on the ethnic cleansing of more than 800,000 Palestinians in 1948. But I think what it reaffirms in 2018, in the 21st century, is that rather than moving towards a democracy or equality, Israel is very decidedly moving away or affirming that it wants nothing to do with those values, and that it is going to ensure that Palestinians remain subordinated. One very significant clause in the law is that it states that Jewish settlement is a basic value or a fundamental value of the state, and says that the state will encourage settlement throughout the country without specifying any limits. In other words, it's affirming that Israel is going to continue building settlements in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, as well as displacing Palestinian citizens of Israel, such as Bedouins in the Negev or Palestinians in the Galilee. And what that means really is that Israel is, with this law, is declaring that it is committed to a one-state solution, but a one-state solution in which Palestinians have no rights at all.
So they're really sort of thumbing their nose at the world, aren't they? Any sort of idea of UN resolutions or any sense of humanity or equality?
Well, that's right. But, I mean, why wouldn't they when they've been able and there's been no minimal level of accountability? So I think this isn't so much about, you know, Israel behaving badly. It's more about the failure of the so-called international community to hold Israel accountable through decades of violating UN resolutions and violating Palestinian rights. What other outcome could you expect?
Well, one of the things we're told, of course, is that Israel's a democracy and the Arab Israelis have the right to vote. And they're also MKs, they would be called, members of Knesset. How is that going to affect them?
Well, that is the propaganda line that we're always told when, you know, when anyone says that Israel is an apartheid state, we're told, oh, that's a lot of nonsense because Palestinian citizens of Israel have the vote and, look, they even have members of parliament. That's true up to a point, but really their rights are totally subordinated. The 12 or so Palestinian members of the Israeli parliament have no say in the government. They never have. And more importantly, they live under a system with about 65 laws that discriminate against Palestinian citizens of Israel solely on the grounds that they're not Jewish. So it's really meaningless. And even apartheid South Africa towards the end had what they called the tricameral system, where they gave what they called coloureds and Indians the vote. So, but that didn't fool anyone. And we've already seen one Palestinian member of the Israeli parliament resign over the law. I think that's a recognition that being a member of a parliament in which you really have no rights is becomes kind of a joke or a futile effort. And also something that wasn't reported at all internationally, but it's very important. It got no attention, but just a few weeks before this law was passed, one of the parties in the Knesset, Balad, which is a Palestinian party representing Palestinian citizens of Israel, put forward a draft law simply stating that all citizens of Israel are equal regardless of their religion and should have full equal rights. That law, you know, the Speaker did not even allow that bill to be filed, which is an extraordinary violation of basic democratic principles, because in any parliament, any member ought to have the right to put forward a bill. Now, members are free to vote against it. They're free to, you know, stop its advance using the proper parliamentary procedures. But in this case, and this was unprecedented, they didn't even allow the bill to be presented. So that's really a measure of how much democracy there is, which is to say not very much at all.
So it's all coming out in the open. Is there a reaction, say, among American Jewish groups?
There's been a lot of reaction from many quarters. You asked specifically about American Jewish groups. And, of course, there are groups like Jewish Voice for Peace, which have become increasingly vocal, particularly representing a younger generation, who have said that, you know, this simply, you know, they've said what I've said, that this confirms this is an apartheid state. What we've seen from some of the more liberal Zionist organizations like J Street is really embarrassment, because what this does is it makes it much harder for them to claim that Israel is a democracy that, you know, is yearning for peace. So they have condemned it from, this embarrasses us. It makes us very hard to defend Israel. And then, of course, you have the far right. Yeah, so the people more on the right are quite happy with it. They don't see a problem with this. And in fact, we've seen people on the very far right in the U.S., people like Richard Spencer, who is an outright neo-Nazi, a white supremacist Nazi, who has said that this law is a very good model for what he would like to do in the United States, to declare the United States a nation state of white Europeans and to heck with everyone else. So that's the kind of constituency that is really supporting this law.
Now, I'm wondering, another story is the release of this lovely young woman, Ahed Tamimi, who'd been imprisoned really for striking a soldier invading her house in her village.
Yes. She spent 8 months in prison for slapping a soldier, and that, of course, was an act of resistance that happened after one of these soldiers had shot her 15-year-old cousin, Mohammed Fadel Tamimi, in the head, causing him serious injuries. He was very lucky to have survived that shooting. But none of the soldiers who shot her cousin, or indeed who shot more than 30 Palestinian children just this year alone, shot and killed them, none of those soldiers have been held accountable at all. Instead, it was Ahed Tamimi who was subjected to a military kangaroo court and put in prison. But I think the lesson from it is that it really backfired for Israel. The persecution of Ahed Tamimi was done to appease rabid right-wing public opinion in Israel that couldn't tolerate seeing a young Palestinian girl stand up for herself and her community and her village, and said we have to have revenge against this family. Israeli officials were very clear that they wanted to exact the price, not just from Ahed, but from the whole family. But the problem is what plays well for the Israeli public causes utter horror in the rest of the world, and the rest of the world saw the reality of this military occupying state, taking its revenge out on a teenager.
Yes, I've just read on your website there's been a lot of killings of children recently, haven't there?
Yes, there has been already in 2018 more than 30 children killed, and that's more than twice the number of last year at the same time. So a really alarming increase in the number of children that have been killed and injured by Israeli occupation forces. The vast majority have been shot by snipers during the Great March of Return in Gaza. And those children, like the dozens of adults who've been killed, were doing nothing that could be remotely considered a danger to anyone. But there is this shoot-to-kill policy. And again, it continues because of the impunity Israel enjoys, in which it's allowed to carry out these sorts of things without paying any price. As long as that impunity is in place, then these killings will unfortunately continue. And among the children that have been...
You're listening to Earthwise, broadcasting in Christchurch on Plains FM 96.9, in Hamilton on Free FM, and in Waikanae on Coast Access FM. Today's guest is Ali Abu Nima, journalist, author, co-founder and director of the website electronicintifada.net.
And I strongly recommend going to that website. We look at it every day. Well, another news is the Freedom Flotilla, the Freedom Flotilla 2018. The latest news is that the boat wasn't allowed through, and we wonder what's going to happen to the detainees.
Well, as of Sunday, that one of two boats had been intercepted, the Alauda, as it's called, and from what the organizers have said is that the ship was boarded violently by Israeli forces in international waters, which is typically what has happened with the flotillas, and they used tasers against some of the passengers. One of the passengers is Dr. Sui Ang, who is some may remember she was in Beirut during the Sabra and Shatila massacres in 1982, and was a witness and is the founder of the charity Medical Aid for Palestinians. So they have been taken to Israel against their will. Basically, the boat was hijacked on the high seas, and as of Tuesday, had been in prison for two nights. What the Israelis have done in the past is they have forced people to sign statements saying they won't come back, basically, and then deporting them and, charging them and doing this in order to say that they, to let them off from charges of illegal entry. Of course, they did not seek to enter Israel. Israel is the one that kidnapped them and brought them in against their will. So it's sort of this Orwellian situation. But the other boat, called Freedom, is still on the high seas. As of Tuesday, it was some 300 nautical miles from Gaza. But it would be very likely that the same thing would happen. And what this all illustrates is that despite the Israeli claims that they withdrew from Gaza, Gaza is under the tightest Israeli control. Nothing and no one can get in and out. And this flotilla comes as Israel has severely tightened the blockade on Gaza. In the month of July, it banned virtually everything from entering Gaza except for food and medicine. But it has banned construction materials, water sanitation, hygiene equipment, a whole host of things that are essential to basic life. And this has put on hold a number of vital water and hygiene projects. Hospitals are coming to a standstill because Israel banned fuel for a period of 2 weeks. And, you know, it is a lethal siege in a very real sense. And that's what the flotillas are protesting. That's what the Great March of Return protests are trying to end. And unfortunately, what we see from governments around the world is a great level of apathy. And that's why I think people are insisting on continuing the protest.
Yes, well, thank you for talking to Ali. I think there's just another example of the impunity that Israel can operate under. And, you know, the great academic, one of my heroes, Noam Chomsky, uses the word sadism. Israel's practicing sadism, particularly on the Palestinians in Gaza. So,
well, that's right. But there's a legal term for it. What they're doing and what they've said openly is that this is collective punishment against the 2 million people in Gaza. And remember, half the population, so 1 million are children. And Israel has said that, you know, the defense minister Avigdor Lieberman has said that this is intended to cause suffering to the population. So it is a deliberate collective punishment.
In the open, really.
Yes, well.
Thank you for talking to us, Ali. And this is a subject that means a lot to us. We'll be talking to you again, I'm sure, in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, Martin, it's always good to talk to Ali Abunima, isn't it?
Yes, he knows exactly what's going on there.
Fine journalist. We have an announcement to make, one that's quite important to us because it involves something we're trying to create ourselves. At the WEA on 59 Gloucester Street, on Sunday the 12th of August from 7 to 8:30, there will be a slide talk about freedom flotillas, past ones as well as the present. And the focus is on who takes part, where they're from, and why. Robert Fiskoy says news items often leave out the question why, which is so important.
So this presentation will give you some background of what has been happening now and what has been happening in the past, probably will keep on happening in the future.
And you'll learn about some amazing people from many countries.
Please remember, Sunday the 12th of August at 7 p.m., WA 59 Gloucester Street.
Now, Martin, I think we've just time to finish with a couple of news items, environment news items. One is from New Zealand and one's from overseas. So shall I go first?
Yeah, you go first with the New Zealand one.
I want to share a forest and bird report. Well, last year, the government pledged that there would be no new mines on conservation land. And in September of this year, the government intends to begin consultation on how to fulfill this pledge to protect all public conservation land for mining. So far, so good. But the New Zealand Petroleum and Minerals, which is part of the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment, is now opening up to mining prospecting huge areas of public conservation land in the Nelson Marlborough and Otago regions. So it looks like two sections of government odds with each other, doesn't it?
So watch this space and apply pressure where suitable. And the last item is from overseas good news. The new Prime Minister of Pakistan, set to be Imran Khan, has a goal of planting 10 billion trees across the country in 5 years. The former cricket star's political party on several environmental initiatives. Quote from him, "If you plant trees, we have discovered by the riverbanks it sustains the rivers. But most importantly, the glaciers that are melting in the mountains, and one of the biggest reasons is because there's been a massive deforestation. So this billion trees is very significant for our future," from Imran Khan.
It's amazing, isn't it, Martin? 1 billion trees. But evidently, Pakistan at the moment has as little as 2.2% of total forest cover. And it's been among the six countries to be most affected by climate change. So they need this deforestation to try to mitigate the impacts of global warming. So good on Imran Khan.
Yeah, good luck to them there.
He's the famous cricketer, by the way.
So from us at Earthwise.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.